Raka is Thai, but the root is actually Sanskrit from Raksha, which means protecting. As we are custodian, so we choose that name. We build ourselves on top of the Fiveblocks wallet infrastructure. We put the app control, we put governance control, we put physical security control, because without all these, I won't be able to sleep at night. If you compare to traditional finance, Fiveblocks would be the core banking. And what we build is actually a mobile banking or online banking that built on top of the core banking for customer to transact.
You have just heard from Artits Rayampuran, founder and CEO of Rockar Digital, a startup backed by SCB10X, which is committed to building a secure, reliable digital asset custodian for the Southeast Asia and Hong Kong market. Previously, Artits worked for Techcombank, one of the largest joint stock banks in Vietnam. He successfully built the corporate digital business and launched Techcombank Business Banking. Prior to that, as a senior vice president of Siam Commercial Bank, Artit was behind the success of SCB Business Anywhere, an inbound and outbound cross-border payment service for businesses, individuals, and Thailand's migrant workers from other Southeast Asian countries. So let us dive right in.
Good evening from Japan and Singapore. We couldn't have found a better timing for a discussion on digital asset custody than today, given that the US Bitcoin ETF got approved last week, and there's certainly a large custody component in that, which we might also still touch upon. But first of all, very welcome to Artit, who's the founder and CEO of Rockar Digital.
Good evening, everyone from Singapore.
You're all over the place. We met at Hong Kong FinTech Week last year, where we attended a few of the same sessions. You got a big part of your team in Bangkok and then in Singapore, so you're flying around quite a bit.
That's right. Good thing it's still within 1 or 2 hours from each other.
That's true. I'll take it as a good sign that there is demand for the type of services that you provide across the region. Let us get straight to the point and start at the beginning. What inspired you, what motivated you to establish Rockar Digital as a crypto digital asset custodian in the first place?
Sure. Rockar Digital, we set up the company in 2022. So we're getting close to 2 years, 2 years young. But that 2 years in crypto is much longer than that. So we set this up on the inspiration that 2 years ago, we saw that the demand of third-party qualified custodian will come. And it actually came. We probably just see what's happening in the US on the ETF. To set up the ETF, all of them have to declare the qualified custodian that they are using. And the regulatory regime in Asia is developing. Some countries like Thailand, actually SEC enforced to use the third-party qualified custodian. In fact, they specific the ratio between hot wallet and cold wallets as well. Singapore just announced that their licensees have to set up its own trust or using a third-party qualified custodian. In principle, basically segregation of the operator fund and the customer's fund. So we see a lot of that happening right now. But 2 years ago, there was not much regulatory development or enforcement. But we see this is a trend. And when the traditional players are jumping to this space, they're going to look for the setup that they're familiar with, which is a separate custodian.
Let's just level set for everyone who might not be familiar with the term as such. So can you explain briefly what the services are that the custodian provides and why it is important?
The terms qualified custodian or licensed custodian is a custodian that safeguarding customer asset and also operating under strict regulatory regime. For example, KYB, KYC, or AML, CFT. But the most important thing is to securely safeguard customer asset.
The emphasis really is on security and compliance. And is there a way that you can differentiate yourself versus the competition? Can you do better security and better compliance than other people?
Of course. Let me touch on security and compliance first, right? Security, we are actually using Fiveblocks as a wallet infrastructure. So the technology behind that is MPC-CMP. MPC-CMP actually break down the private key into multiple key shards and being stored on separate devices or servers to prevent the cyber hack. One of the key share that we keep on an offline signing device, this is categorized as core wallet because it doesn't connect to internet. So what we do is we put that key in a vault that we store in a secure room, completely offline air gap to avoid a cyber attack. Also, to be able to access the secure room and the secure wall, it's only allowed to the authorized persons, and they have to connect through the biometrics with the proper access code to those secure rooms. It's being monitored 24/7 by CCTV, so it's very secure. Even if these internal staff can access the device and they're trying to do the transaction signing, they're trying to move customer asset to their own wallet, they cannot do it because we have proper governance that our own staff cannot create any transaction. To move customer asset has to come from the customer themselves. We are not allowed, any single person in the company is not allowed to initiate any transaction.
You mentioned already different regulators, so the SEC in Thailand, we have the MAS in Singapore, and then we have the Hong Kong regulators as well. How do you compare the regulatory regimes? Do they all have a specific regulation for custody?
They do, and obviously each of the jurisdiction would have a different speed in implementing the regulatory regime. In Hong Kong, last year they launched the VASP and four VATP, which are exchanges to be licensed in Hong Kong. What happened in Hong Kong, particularly for custody activity, because there is no digital asset custodian license in Hong Kong, SFC actually put it in the VATP regime that if you want to obtain VATP and operate as an exchange, you would have to set up a separate entity to do custody of customer asset as well. The concept is to segregate customer asset. It has to be in trust. Although since there is no local licensees custodian, they have to enforce the change to set up a separate entity holding trust license and do their own custodian, because this is what SFC can control. If they say you must use a third-party custodian, then it will force their licensees to go abroad and use offshore license custodian, which in their view, probably more risky, I would say.
And so when we were in Hong Kong together last year, that was beginning of November, I think that's when all the regulations came out or the proposals for the rules in Hong Kong. It felt like there was really a positive vibe in the rooms, right? Not only for, let's say, classic crypto, but then also tokenized securities or security tokens, yep, or tokenized revert assets, everything in that space. Has that changed? Is that still going hot for you in that market as well?
We believe there will be more and more regulatory regime coming in different jurisdictions. It will take time. But what we see as a trend is there are more and more big players, especially institutionals, jumping into this space. Like what you said, real-world asset tokenization, end of last year, there was a paper, a regime came up in Hong Kong. And we see the trend going that way as well. Hopefully, there will be a regime very soon. Right now, we see that happening in Thailand. I think Malaysia also has the custodian license. Indonesia and Philippines also have the custodian license. But we're hoping that Singapore and Hong Kong will come up with the custodian license very soon.
When you look at Hong Kong, you said it's indirect, so it's basically part of the VASP license. Can they outsource this to a third party? So can you be the bankruptcy remote entity that does the custody? Or does that still need to be under the control of the VASP?
In Hong Kong, yeah. Right, it has to be under control of the VASP. So SFC put in the paper explicitly that the VATP has to set up a 100% owned subsidiary and has to be under trust to hold customer assets. So it has to be a separate entity, 100% owned by the exchange. That's basically what it is.
At the most, you could be a technology infrastructure provider, but you couldn't truly aim for your own license there yet.
That's correct. So right now, we cannot provide a service to Hong Kong entities. I mean, Hong Kong VATP. But what we heard from SFC, their plan is to eventually have custodian license as well, in which we would apply and then we'll be able to service a customer in Hong Kong.
As an entrepreneur, I assume you picked this space also because you see a certain growth rate. And if anything, then, although it's a different market entirely, but the US Bitcoin ETF certainly flipped the switch somehow, where we can say that now really the institutions are coming. We've been seeing that for, I don't know, 5 or 6 years, right? When the institutions are coming, then it's going to take off. Now it seems to be taking off. And so when you look out over the next 4 years, you need some of the regulations in place to compete, but how do you see the market evolving and your opportunity for growth?
Since you touched on the entering of this market, my exposure to digital asset and crypto was in 2017 when we did some remittance work between Siam Commercial Bank, which is our investor, together with Ripple, and I could see big impact because we helped facilitating the money transfer from immigrant worker that work abroad to transfer money back to their home for their family, and the fee is much cheaper, and that was great, right? So we see a lot of potential and it could help a lot of people. That's when it gets started. In terms of institutional adoption, yes, we've been talking about this for ages, and I still believe when that happens, it will be a game changer. We started to see that's actually happening. So we see the real-world asset tokenization. I would say a very good example is the tokenizer of U.S. Treasury bill. Instead of holding a stablecoin, people could hold the U.S. Treasury bill token and earn some 5% good return. And you might say that people in developed country, they could just go and buy fund or bonds by themselves. But this actually gives a lot of opportunity for people who did not have a chance to invest in this asset class before. Help them to diversify their portfolio, help them to generate more for the asset class that they would not be able to access at all. Also, the ETF, people could argue you could buy Bitcoin directly. Like, why would you need ETF? But in my view, I think different people has different risk appetite. People who never invest in crypto before, or people who have no idea of how they would manage a crypto wallet. Investing through ETF would be more comfortable for them. This actually opened a lot more opportunity because the people and the money that would have never been into crypto could be entering crypto from now on. This could be a game changer.
We're all looking at these charts of assets under management when the gold ETF came up. Of course, we had a bit of an adverse reaction, was a bit sell on the news, but then there was so much money tied up in the Grayscale ETF now. There's probably some liquidations and people freeing up their money there, right? And hopefully, even if it go below 40K again, we get some floor because this money is pretty sticky, especially if some of the ETFs then also get held by your personal pension accounts, like a 401k or something.
Yes, this is a completely different type of investor that previously investing in crypto. These investors wouldn't be daily trading. They'll probably put their investment there looking for more like a long-term return.
There's a severe concentration in the custodians in the US. We've got 11 ETFs. We've got 8 of them under Coinbase custody. Fidelity is using its own subsidiary, so you get the traditional big guns for custody involved. And then the other two are two exchange-associated, affiliated custodians. When we talk about competition, now that it's starting there in the US, clearly, you knew that the custody business has some big traditional players in there that might be moving into this space at some point. But what do you think about these old guns, traditional players?
That actually proved one point, that trust and credibility is actually very important for custodian. And that's why Coinbase get the majority of the market. For us, I think the fact that we're backed by a bank, giving that credibility, but we're still very new to the market. We see a lot of potential. If you look at crypto and digital asset market size, that's huge. But if you look at the asset of the whole industry under custodian, that's still very low, meaning it could move from self-custody to a qualified custodian. And we still believe that when regulatory regime is developed, there'll be more of the asset moving from self-custody to a qualified custodian. Like you can see this in ETF, Coinbase is dominating the market, and it is a must requirement from the US SEC that you must use a custodian. You will see more and more asset moving to qualified custodian. That's what we believe. The other factor is that if you are an exchange, I don't believe they should put all of their asset under AUM in one custodian. What if something happened to that custodian? I believe in risk management. I believe in risk diversification. Let's say if you have 1 billion total asset as an exchange, the good practice is you should break that down into, let's say, two or three chunks, and then put in multiple custodians to, first of all, leverage insurance of multiple custodians. Second of all is to mitigate the risk. If something has gone wrong with one custodian, then it's not the whole of the bucket, right? It's simple, like nobody should put all the eggs in one basket. But sometimes people forget, and this is the principle that I want to emphasize as well. So even with the big players in the market, with all these principles, there is still chances and gaps that we could fill.
So we shouldn't look at the market as simply the first one through the door gets everything. You're essentially saying there is a one-to-multiple relationship in terms of the fund versus the custodians, or also the exchanges and the custodians possibly. You mentioned also SCB as your investor. Typically, this is not necessarily only a financial investment, but it's also creating an option for the future for themselves. What do they think, together with you, about the integration of this new industry with the traditional banking system?
This might not happening right now, but what we're seeing is crypto and digital asset could be an interesting asset class for them, right? How can we seamlessly put them together? For example, a customer of the banks, they already have investment portfolio, they have their bank account with the bank. How could we offering digital asset related services into this? Very simple thing that we could do is a seamlessly KYC that we could leverage from the bank and offer them only enhanced KYC that we require for the bank customer to be able to invest in digital asset. That could be one way. Another way is what we also looking at is to help our customer to do on and off ramp. So basically moving their digital asset into fiat, of course, in a regulatory compliance basis. Those two are the things that we are working on and hopefully we can offer to our customers.
This is your previous employer, isn't it?
Yeah, I used to work at SCB. So I built digital banking for SME and corporate there.
Yes, I've watched some interviews from you from that time where you dressed a bit differently, really traditional banker style, no Rucker Digital t-shirts.
Yep, that was my previous life.
Does the name is symbolic for something in the Thai language?
Rakha is Thai, but the root is actually Sanskrit from Raksha, which means protecting. As we are custodian, so we choose that name. And it's good that it actually relates to our root as well and relates to our business.
Coming back a bit to this security angle, this is anything but static. Obviously, there's lots of money involved, and once it's freed up, it flows very quickly. So being on the forefront, cybersecurity and encryption technologies, etc., is essential for your business. How do you keep on top of it, or your team? What type of people do you hire? Where do you get them from to make sure you're not missing dotting an I or crossing a T?
Yeah, we talked about security before. We're using 5 blocks MPC CMP, which is the most secure technology in the market right now. Our management come from different background. I'm a product person, but I used to work for a bank. So I also have banking, compliance, and product experience. Our CISO built at crypto.com, and he helped us to build our security framework and control and got us here today, which is very good. In terms of security, we believe we have the most secure technology and wallet infrastructure. It might not be enough, right? So we put control on top of that. What we did was we built our own proprietary mobile application and web portal for our customer to access. And that's where our customer can initiate the transaction and approve the transaction. We have a minimum quorum requirement, so at least it has to be two people within customer organization. So one has to initiate, one has to approve. They can set up the policy by themselves. It could be 2 out of 3, or 2 out of 2, or 2 out of 5, or 5 out of 10, up to their risk profile. That prevents single point of failure. Not only one person can generate a transaction. So a transaction has to be created by our customer. We use the multi-factor authentication. It has to be biometrics, it has to be PIN code. If it's high value transaction, they have to do video recording in the app. Within our organization as a custodian, we have different level of approval. Between the risk of the transaction, the value of the transaction, it will have different profile of approval. Before it actually enter the security, the wallet, these are the control that we put in. It's very, very difficult to get through it. And on top of that, we talk about the secure room before signing the transaction. Someone has to get in the room, have to get the device, have to log into the portal, and then sign the transaction. Multiple layers that people have to get through to be able to fraud or steal the customer asset, because this is very important for us. We can only make one mistake and we are out of business. We're being very careful about this and we put all the control that we need to put in to protect our customer asset.
You mentioned that the basis of your infrastructure is Fireblocks. Where does the functionality end that Fireblocks provides? Is that really, quote-unquote, just the core with multi-party computation, and then everything you described is built on top of that by yourself?
Yeah, exactly. What we build ourselves on top of the Fireblocks wallet infrastructure. We put the app control, we put governance control, we put physical security control, because without all these, I won't be able to sleep at night. If you compare to traditional finance, Fireblocks would be the core banking. And what we build is actually a mobile banking or online banking that built on top of the core banking for customer to transact.
When you get super secure and you verify everything 3 times, you typically end up with losing flexibility as well. To make a proper trade-off is very difficult. So how much control is enough, but then also how much control is too much so that you stifle the business ultimately?
Our 3 keywords are secure, compliance, and seamless. You can be very secure, you can be very compliant, but you can't just close the system and protect everything. You have to be able to offer a seamless experience for our customers. That's what we thought when we set up the company. And that's why we built our own mobile app and the web portal for our customer to do all these things online by themselves. Most of the custodian did not have that, but people are seeing the needs of this seamless customer experience. So more and more of people offering a mobile and online portal for customer to access. We demoed our product to multiple customers, and so far we've been getting great feedback. Some of the customers, we didn't even have to provide training to them because they just get the link from us, they download the app, they go through the app by themselves, which is for a product person, that actually something that I'm very proud of, that we design a product that customer can self-learn and do things by themselves.
You made a digital banking comparison, mobile banking comparison earlier. That is studies across all the mobile banking apps. How many clicks do you need to open an account? How many clicks to make a transfer, etc.? And once the more established players like you will get this comparison in the custody space as well.
And I'm pretty comfortable to offer a seamless experience online for our customer because our main business is Core Wallet and we are custodians, so we hold the key. Eventually, whatever happens on the online channel, it has to come to us, the final gatekeeper, and we have to go into the secure room, get the device, sign the device. Even if it gets compromised on the online, we have human to be able to validate every single transaction before we actually sign a transaction and withdraw customer asset. It's a good balance between offering seamless experience and security.
The absolute scare factor is generative AI. I just look at my social media footprint, there's enough voice and video of myself out there that you could train a model with. And like you said, even if your app needs to take a live picture, if somebody is technically savvy, could they impersonate me? That feels a very risky proposition at this moment, because there's so many unknowns in there. And we haven't really heard about big breaches using that, but it feels like they're coming surely.
Yeah, it is indeed scary. I can impersonate you, and then we see that for fun in social media, right? But not in a real fraud case yet, but that could potentially happen. We actually thought of that. What we do is, for certain limits of transaction, you have to do a video recording. And on our app screen, we will random certain words that the customer need to speak and say what the words on the app, right? So it will be very random. They have to follow the instruction. When that happens, the video will be sent to our operation staff. They will validate against the video of that particular user when they onboarded to see if this is a real person. It might be impersonate one person, but as I mentioned before, we have certain admin quorum. So at least two people have to perform the creation of the transaction and approval of the transaction. At least two people have to be compromised from customer side. And then as we are custodian, we still have gatekeeper. So we're pretty confident on validating the transaction from these customers.
In that regard, it might be actually beneficial to reintroduce some friction into the process, not automate everything. So if somebody says transfer all my assets at once, that actually just generates a breakpoint, like it does on some payment apps as well. They say, are you sure you want to do this? And somebody, a human person, intervenes and says, talk me
exactly
through your rationale.
In fact, I can share one case that actually happened before. So a hacker actually filed the low limit of an exchange. With that low limit, it will always go straight through. A hacker actually create multiple transactions that is below that certain limit, and it always straight through for that. I think it withdraw hundreds of millions within only a few minutes because they filed that loophole. For us, since we are cold wallet, every single transaction, we need to sign it manually. That will not happen in our case.
So many things to think of. All right, last question maybe around funding and runway and so on. You said you are in this for 2 years. 23 was obviously very hard to raise money. It seems to turn into a more positive environment. How is your runway, and how do you see the next funding round in the current environment, or what you're projecting?
Finger crossed for the market situation. So if you look on the news, we were quite fortunate to get a significant seed round in 2022 for $10 million. That actually allowed us to be able to build the product, having appropriate license, getting appropriate certificates, and we already have a few customers with us. We are on a good traction. The fact that we're operating in multiple countries like Hong Kong and Singapore, where cost of living is high. We also have the bigger team in Thailand and Vietnam for their supporting the product team and the tech team. Vietnam has amazing developers, and they help us build our product, making our cost very cost effective. Our OPEX is quite low, making us a good runway. We've been operating for almost 2 years. We have a good over a year runway that we have to be able to build the business, build attraction, acquiring customer, making some revenue before we raise the next round. I think second half of this year, we'll start talking to investor. We should have a good traction of customer to show them and build the valuation and then raise the next round so we can build the business and expand within Asia and hopefully further from Asia as well. Acquiring and building business is important, but you have to be very diligent and very prudent and punctual on cost management as well. I think that's very important for startup. Most of the startup tend to forget about that. Thinking about building business, thinking about building revenue all the time, but managing cost is also very important for startup.
You found it at the right time, at the end of the bubble phase. You got the right mindset.
That's a good point as well, because if we founded our company in the bull market, we won't be able to do all these things. The market will carry us away. The fact that we set up in the bear market, we built in the bear market, now we're ready for the next market picked up.
But also, if you're in the custody business, it's not that easy to switch the custodian. So the fees that you're generating once you capture a customer are pretty sticky. Maybe there's even an opportunity for debt financing based on the sticky revenue stream.
And I believe a good product, a seamless customer experience, or if we could connect our customer to generate more yield, like we talked about the US Treasury bill token before, those kind of things will generate stickiness and the customer will be with you. One thing that's very important in custody, especially the core wallet, the qualified custodian space, is the SLA. The SLA of some custodian could be 24 hours to 48 hours, which is quite amazing in crypto world that to process a transaction takes a day or two. That's quite sad. Our SLA, we like to say that we can sign a transaction pretty fast and we do 24/7 support as well. So that is one of our strengths and it could also be the stickiness generation point as well.
Good service always wins. It was a great conversation. Really appreciate Artit and best of luck going forward. I'm sure we'll be in touch.
Appreciate it, Norbert. Thanks for having me.